It's a little unusual setting, isn't it? We are more comfortable than you are.
Amen.
Somebody said, we need to get those chairs for the auditorium. I said, well, everybody would fall asleep more than normally. So we can't do that. Well, anyway, we've decided to do things a little bit different today, a little bit less formal, and just talk to you today and instead of what we call a regular lesson. But with that being said, I wanted to begin by going over the verses that the missions committee decided to use for this particular conference. So let's look at that together, if you would, and everything is on the screen there for you. Now, when they had traveled through Amphipolis and Apollonia, they came to Thessalonica, where there was a synagogue of the Jews, and according to Paul's custom, he went to them, and for three Sabbaths reasoned with them from the Scriptures, explaining and giving evidence that the Christ, you need the next verse, right? There we go. And that the Christ had to suffer and rise from the dead, saying, this Jesus, whom I am proclaiming to you, is the Christ. And some of them were persuaded and joined Paul and Silas, along with a large number of God-fearing Greeks and a number of the leading women. But the Jews, becoming jealous and taking along some wicked men from the marketplace, formed a mob and set the city in an uproar, and attacking the house of Jason, they were seeking to bring them out to speak to the people. And then finally, as we look at these last two verses, these are the ones that we really wanted to bring your attention to. And when they did not find them, they began dragging Jason and some brethren before the city authorities, shouting, these men who have upset the world. Now, the King James, what does it say, Gary? Do you remember?
Turn the world upside down.
Turn the world upside down. Have come here also, and Jason has welcomed them, and they all act contrary to the decrees of Caesar, saying that there is another King Jesus. I wanted to take just a couple of minutes and give you the background so you understand these verses. In Acts chapter 17, we find that the Apostle Paul was on a second missionary journey. On his first journey, he left from his home church in Antioch of Assyria. There are many Antiochs, but Antioch of Assyria is in Assyria, north of Jerusalem, north of Israel. And there he went with a person by the name of Barnabas. And they traveled through Asia, much of it through Turkey. They also went to an island. They started churches. They preached. They taught. A lot of great things happened. They were gone about a couple of years. Can you imagine that? Bye. I'll see you in a couple of years. And away they went. When they returned, they stayed for a while. They gave report to the church of Antioch of what they had accomplished. And then after some time, Paul decided to go back. And when he was ready to go back, he wanted to once again bring Barnabas. But on that first trip, there was a man by the name of John Mark, who for whatever reason, the Bible does not tell us, ended up going back to Antioch as they got into that first journey. And John Mark was a cousin of Barnabas, and that made Paul very upset. He really struggled with that. And so on the second missionary journey, Barnabas said, well, we need to take John Mark. And the Apostle Paul said, no, we're not taking him this time because he quit the first time. And so here we have two men of God, Barnabas and Paul, get into an argument, and they split up. They could not work it out, which quite honestly is kind of sad, but they could not work it out. So what happened was, is Barnabas took John Mark, and they went one way. And then the church at Jerusalem sent Silas. And Silas met Paul, not in Antioch, but he met Paul as Paul had already started the journey by himself. And I think he met him somewhere around Derbe. I believe that's where they connected. So Paul starts his second missionary trip after division. And as he's going along on his missionary trip, you notice from these verses that we read that he always started by teaching in the synagogues. He started by teaching his own people first because the scripture says the gospel came to the Jew first and then the Gentile. And there are a couple of cities that we mentioned the very first verse that there's nothing said about it. One is Apollonia, and you saw the other one there. And it's interesting, nothing is said. And the reason why we think there's nothing said is because there probably was not 10 men to form a synagogue. And so since there was no synagogue there, theologians believe that Paul did not stop there. He stayed there, but he didn't preach there, teach there, and he kept going. And when he finally got to Thessalonica, there was a synagogue there. In fact, Thessalonica was a huge city in Europe. Now, what's fascinating is that if you take time and you continue to read this story, that Paul was not allowed to go into Asia. He had prayed, and God had said, no, I don't want you to go to Asia this time. I want you to go to Europe. And Thessalonica, obviously, if you know anything about history, is in Greece. It's half part of Greece, Macedonia. And so we find that Thessalonica, being a city in Macedonia and Greece, is in Europe. And so God led him to Europe. And while he was in Europe, he had this vision. And while he was in this vision, before he got to chapter 17, this happened in chapter 16, we call it the Macedonian call, where Paul had a vision of a man crying out, will you come over and help us? And that's where we pick up in chapter 17. Paul had already gone into Macedonia, and now he comes into this city called Thessalonica. And it's there that as they preached the gospel and people came to Christ, that Jason, who befriended the people that were traveling with Paul, who by this time was not only Silas, it was also Timothy, and it also was Dr. Luke, had also joined the expedition. And they had preached, and people had come to Christ. It created such an uproar that they said, we need to stop these men because they've literally turned the world upside down. So that kind of gives you a better understanding of these verses and a context that will help you. And so Gary and the missions committee thought this would be a great springboard for us as we talk about how can Cross Point Church turn the world upside down. Now, what we also wanted to do is I wanted Gary just to kind of go through and introduce the missions committee for you.
Okay, we have several folks on our missions committee, and they play various roles. Nick Henry is our chairman of our missions committee. He pretty much will put the agendas together for our meetings. He'll do a lot of filtering of people with financial requests, things of this nature, along with Margaret, his wife, is a real asset to our ministry there. So they work very hard. They've been on several trips. Mike and Jan Wickham, they've been on several trips, and they have a heart and a burden for missions. Mike is 77, and I'll tell you, I tried to work with him this past time in Belize, and he worked me into the ground. And then we have Dr. Stewart, Sarah Stewart. She goes, and she's actually on one of our pictures. She's been to Cambodia. I think she's going to Belize in January with you. Mm-hmm. And then Allison Reed, she is heading a team up today. They leave today. Deb Netto with her and several other folks are going to Haiti to minister there. Then we have Terry Conley. She plays an important role of keeping our minutes. She's our secretary, does a great job. And of course, you know Carol, her husband. Lori Fiddler does our financials. She manages the financial reports and the budget for us. Let's let Terry know what needs to be paid, what not. Then my wife, Roseberry, she's been with me on several trips to Nepal. Kelly Robinson, she does a great job. Great job with our missions committee. And she'll be sharing some things next week with Pastor about a new opportunity we'll have. And our last member is Lynn Estes. And if you've been getting the devotionals every morning at 8 o'clock, Lynn is actually the person who put those together. She collected them all, compiled them, sent them to me. I sent them to Kayla Michau, and she dressed them all up, made them look pretty, and then Jerry got them. And I don't know about you, but I've been enjoying every morning getting the devotion with a focus on missions. It's really been a blessing to me.
Absolutely. Some of the things that you guys wanted to do was this whipping post over here.
Yeah, the whipping post we used last week as a great visual, because we shared last week that in the movie The Passion, Mel Gibson had Jesus on a much lower post, maybe three and a half feet tall. Where in my research and the studies that I've done, it was much larger and much taller, which we elaborated on last week. And of course, the cat of nine tails and the nails, and the whole premise is again for Paul when he went. And what they did and why they turned the world upside down is because their lives had been transformed by an encounter with Jesus Christ. That's how they were transformed into going and doing all of that he did. And if you look and study Paul's life, the amount of suffering he faced, why would he do that? Why? Because he loved the Lord and he had encountered the cross, the resurrection, and every aspect of who Jesus Christ really is.
Let me see if I can go back and show something which really is the key to our whole faith. And this is it right here, explaining and giving evidence that the Christ had to suffer and rise again from the dead. Folks, without the resurrection, there's no Christianity.
That's right.
That separates Christianity from the rest of the world is the resurrection. And that's why they created such a stir.
Such a stir, because again, the power of the resurrection, they couldn't help but tell people about Jesus, and they couldn't help but go and serve him. And Paul says, I don't care, for me to live as Christ, but die is gain. I got to do this. And he counted it all but lost. I got to get the word out, and it, regardless of what it cost him. And so I prayed and really heavy heart about this, if we encounter Jesus in such manner, there's nothing that's going to hold us back.
Amen.
Nothing's going to hold us back.
And then the missions committee wanted folks to do what, Gary?
Well, these are our invert walls, and this is just a challenge to you. No one has to participate in it, but you'd be surprised the brainstorming that could happen and how we can impact our world, our community for Jesus Christ. We're looking for ways that we can make a difference. How can we make there's a song out there called Difference Makers. How can we make a difference in people's lives? What can we do? It doesn't have to be elaborate. It can be very simple and basic. Helping an elderly woman rake their yard. Helping a veteran mow his grass. Sending a card out. Recognizing and praying for our public officials and letting them know that you're praying for them. There's all kinds of ways, and sometimes the best way to solve a problem is to brainstorm. And so by you writing your ideas on may trigger another idea for something else. And so they're really, they're fun to read, they're encouraging, but I'd encourage you to do it. One, it's gonna make it concrete.
You don't have to put your name to it.
We don't want you to put your name to it anyways. That's between you and the Lord, and that's the important, don't put your name, but just try it. You may find you come up with a great idea that would spark another idea. The ultimate gift wasn't my idea. Carol Bailey used to do that in her church down in Louisiana, so I took that idea. Movie in the Park wasn't my idea. Movie in the Park I took from another church in Massachusetts. The invert I took from my son's church in New York. And we just tweaked it and adapted it. There's nothing new under the sun. So maybe your idea sparks another idea of how you can impact your community.
Well, it's time to take you to some different ministries where your giving and your participation, I think it's very important that you see how you are involved around the world. First of all, this is what year, Gary?
This is in 2004.
This is your first?
My very, very first overseas mission trip. My first mission trips anyways, outside of going to my mom and dad's house. That was a mission trip. Tell them about Jesus. But this was in 2004. Pastor had asked me if I would go along with him to Cambodia, where we would teach the national pastors there with OTAN. And this is in a small village away from the city of Sisyphon. And to the left there, right next to pastor, is the pastor of the church. His name is Ham Soy, Pastor Ham Soy. He pastored three churches. And I asked Jack and Susie Wortman, who were there with us, when does church start? And they said, whenever he shows up, because he was pastoring three churches. And so when he gets there, that's when they just start gathering. They don't live by the clock. They don't die by the clock like we do.
This whole church would fit on our platform.
His whole church would have fit on our platform. We could have probably put three of his churches on the platform. Easy.
Very small.
Very small.
This is also Cambodia. Gary was not on this trip, but this particular picture here is part of the floating village. Some of you here during this service might have gone to the floating village with us on one of our recent missionary trips to Cambodia.
I think that's where that picture comes from.
I think so. Yeah, I think you're right. But the whole village lives on the water. Stores. This is the Galilee Church. So if you want to go to church, you jump in your canoe, your boat, and you paddle over or whatever, and you pull up and you go to church. I mean, the whole, think of everything you do and everywhere you go is on water. That's the floating village. It's kind of hard to fully grasp that, isn't it? But that's the floating village there. And then we're going to jump over to Vietnam. These are a couple of pastors, very faithful guys that have preached the word. And so I wanted to jump in and grab a picture with them while we were training over in Vietnam. You notice the far right, you might be able to pick out Scott Stewart. He's up in the tech booth this morning. This is when he had dark hair and not gray hair. And I'm teasing him, but it's true. This is also a few years ago. We had a great time. There's also other people from our church there. On the far left in the back is Chris Boyle. I don't know if you recognize Chris Boyle. Down the front in the left-hand corner of the picture are a couple of Western girls. You see them. One is Kim Sorensen. She was just at our church just recently. She's now in China as a full-time missionary. This was really her first getting into missions full-time. Her parents were missionaries, but for her, this was kind of a turning point for her. And then the other lady she's sitting by is Kristen Casella. Christian, since this picture, ended up marrying a Chinese gentleman. And so, anyway, once we spend the whole week and we train, we give them a certificate, and there they are. And then for lunch, for dinner, we take a break, we eat on the floor. I don't eat with chopsticks. This was kind of a photo shot here, but we do sit on the floor and eat. But that was very interesting as well. And then we went on to Nepal, and then Gary was with me when we went to Nepal on another trip. That was the same one as the Cambodia trip we mentioned earlier a few minutes ago. This is a graduation where the pastors had finished about 3 or 4 years of courses that we had taught, and it was time for them to graduate. So I was the commencement speaker, and this is on top of a third-story house. So think about where you graduated. Probably wasn't on the third story of a house. Now, off to the right of that, the ladies are cooking lunch. They're over there cooking with big pots and so forth. Very, very interesting. So we had a great, great time. This is the whole graduating class. There's Gary and I on the left and the right. And Gary, they're wearing these hats. What are these hats?
These hats are the traditional Nepali hat. They're called a topi. And when we take people there, they typically will recognize their guests. They want to show some act of gratitude, and they'll buy us a topi and a scarf or something like that. Something to just say thank you for coming and be a part of it. And it's just a very traditional hat. There's no right way or wrong way of wearing it.
They wear them all the time. Everybody.
They wear them all the time. And so we're going to bring a couple new people with us in March. I'll be going on Nepal in March. And you know, you got to let them know, wear the hat, because it's a sign of respect. If you don't wear the hat while you're with them, you've just disrespected them, because it means a lot. It costs them a lot of money to show this act of kindness towards you. So it's very important. But they wear them all the time, yeah.
So after the graduation, we went to a very interesting place. Gary, why don't you kind of walk us through here?
This is what we just refer to it as the Monkey Temple. Because there's wild monkeys running all over the place, and this is where they publicly cremate the bodies along the riverbed there. There are probably 10 or 12 altars like this all the way down. And there they'll build a wood altar like that, and then they'll get a body, and within 24 hours the person has got to be brought to the temple to be burned. So it's a public cremation there that takes place. And so they'll put the body up there, and then the family members, and it's based on a hierarchy of kin. If there's a brother or a father, based on who's available is who starts the fire. It's not the Hindu priest that does this. It will be a family member that does this. And this is where it is. And we watch this whole ceremony and the wailing. If you've never heard wailing, you need to go there and hear the wailing that goes on as the family does this. And he'll walk around and they'll chant so many prayers. And what the family member is about to do, and I've got the video of this. I videotaped the whole, but he takes the torch and he puts the torch to the face first. And it's really not that far from our belief system, because they believe that the mouth is the place where all evil comes from, in the face. And we look at the Bible verse that says out of the mouth precedes the intents of the heart. And so that's where they'll burn first, and they'll set that on fire, and then they'll pour animal fat on there to help raise it. And right there below there, you can see it. It's the water, and it's only about 10, 12 inches deep when it's when they're outside of monsoon season. And it is about as dirty as you can't imagine how dirty it is. The cloth and the material that still floats in there, and the trash.
Well, to get an idea for I've been there numerous times. This is the first time I took you. Once they're finished burning everything down, they just sweep it all in the water.
All into the water, everything. It just goes there. And the one time I was there, and they were burning actually 8 bodies at one time. And that was the time I had to put my shirt up over my nose. And
kids play in the water.
Kids play in the water. The cows were in the water. There's people just walk through the water. It's just the way it is. It's just life there.
And what's really crazy, when you're walking around, baboons will literally jump on your back.
You have to be very careful, because if you get caught, cut, or bit by one of those, you get real sick. So I tell everybody, make sure you keep your hands in your pockets. Don't bring no food. And, put your wallet in your front pocket, too, because there's always a chance of a pickpocket there. And it's quite the place to see. And I take everybody there the first time they come to Nepal with me. You have to see it.
I wanted to show you the contrast between East and West. It's quite a contrast, isn't it? East and West.
Now, this guy here is a regular Hindu Brahmin priest.
Yes.
And they'll be all over the monkey temple like this, and they'll dress. And so for so many much money, you can get your picture taken with them. And so this was in 2004, and it moved me so much. I tell you, it was a life-changing thing. This trip set the tone for all of my heart for missions. It really was what set the tone. And I loved missions before, but it just changed me. But I could not take my picture. Pastor was asking me, come on, Gary, we'll have our picture taken with this guy. And I just couldn't, because he offered no hope to the people. If I get into the water and I get my body burned, maybe I'll come back as something better. But there was no hope, but we have a blessed hope. And I just couldn't do it. I just, no way. It was life-changing, though.
In Hinduism, the body has to be burned within 24 hours so they can go to the next life. And for the Christians in Hindu countries, or people that practice the Hindu religion, it's difficult for Christians in that culture, because if their family come to Christ or their friends come to Christ, it's not unusual after they bury them that their family members that are in Hinduism will come to the cemetery and dig the body up and take them to the temple and have them burned. So that's very, very difficult for Christians in that culture when that happens.
And it's very hard for them to find a cemetery because of the political government, and the ties are on there. They just don't let them have those places like we have here.
Right. On another trip that Gary was not a part of, I went to the country of Laos. Laos is extremely closed, very communistic, very little gospel there. Really quite dangerous as far as Christianity is concerned. I went to the village, this Christian village. There were about 100 people that lived there. This is a sweet 90-year-old woman. She's, I'm sure, in heaven by now. This was a few years ago. And she was gracious enough for me to have my picture taken with her. This Christian village was not allowed to have electricity because they were a Christian village. Now, can you imagine that? That would be like you not being able to have electricity in your home because you were a Christian. So the whole village was not allowed to have electricity because they were a Christian village, which is just hard for us to fully grasp. So I went around and talked to the different folks and went to their homes. So this would be a typical Laotian home out in the village. Obviously very poor. People don't have much to speak of. Now, I want you to look at this, and this is quite normal. I just read an article just this week off the news. It was a study put out by the World Bank. And the most recent studies is that 50% of the entire world makes less than $5.50 a day. And much of the world makes less than $2 a day. So if you had $5.50 a day, you would be living like this too, because you wouldn't be able to buy food or anything else. Now, the interesting thing here is that you notice the houses are always up on stilts. And there's a couple of reasons. One is because of wild animals and creatures, but there's another reason too, Gary.
Well, for many of these folks, because we're talking about Southeast Asia, the monsoon seasons, mm-hmm. the rains are torrential, and the amount of water they get in that time period is massive. And so in order for them to stay dry, they have to build their homes up on the stilts like that, on the pylons, whatever you want to call them. And I don't think we understand what monsoon season really means. I've seen video come from Prakash where the rain is coming off of the road, down the road so hard that it actually moves the car, the overflow. And it's just, I don't think we understand it.
Now, before I went to the village in Laos, I was in Thailand, and we had brought about 30 to 50 pastors to Thailand with Outreached Asian Nationals. That's OTAN is the acronym for that. And we brought these pastors over, so they invited us to their village, and so we went to the village. But while we were in Thailand, we were in a hotel, and we rented a conference room, and the pastors were there. And while we were there, the lady started doing a traditional Laotian dance. And so guess who joined us? I've done it all. So this music was a special music. And it goes on and on and on, and they sing and they sing and they sing, and it's a different sound, as you heard, than what we're different, that we different would listen to. But I think it's important, Gary, that people need to understand, when you're with somebody in another culture, you need to engage.
You have to embrace the culture when you're there. One of the things that I've asked everybody now that goes on a trip, regardless if it's your first one or your second one or 10th one, There's a book that we ask them to read, and it really helps us learn that. We're now doing trainings before our teams go, so they can understand the importance, and the term is ethnocentrism. We don't want to come across as being superior or better than them, because they don't do everything the same way we do. And you have to eat some of the food that they eat. You have to embrace some of the things. Going into church, if we were in Nepal right now, all your shoes would be outside the church. If we were in Nepal, you'd be sitting on the floor with the women on this side and the men on this side. And that's just the way it is. And
it's different.
It's just different, but you have to.
Now, question we need to ask, or you need to ask, and I mean this in a nice way, but sometimes in missions, you do things that you would not normally do, right? But I'll tell you what, if you love the people, you do it.
You have to love the people. That's the key.
That's the key.
It's loving the people. And, and I shared in the first service how Rosemary in Nepal will eat. You get rice and dal, and they'll have fresh vegetables, and you pour your dal over the rice, and you mush it all up, and they'll give us a fork and a knife and a spoon or whatever, but they eat mostly, primarily with their fingers. And so the last time she was there, she did that, and it just blessed them so much to see her embrace their culture and the way they do things. And so, if you go on a trip, the more you can do that, the better connection you're going to have with them, and the more you're going to get done.
Right. On another trip, this is China. I don't know if the Leongs are here today. Are they here today? I don't know if they are. Maybe they'll be at the next service. I never know who's here or who isn't here. The reason I say that is because we're going to hear a pastor pray in Chinese here. When we landed in China, we were picked up by a couple of men who grabbed our luggage, and they wouldn't let us carry our luggage, or they did it all. We drove about 2 or 3 hours, I'm not sure where, And we went into a compound, they closed the gate, and we never saw the sky for 4 or 5 days because it was so sensitive, dangerous. And so we stayed in the compound. Now, you notice anything about how they're dressed? You know, winter coats. There's no what? No heat. And so that was an extremely, literally cold week that we had. But I want to show a video of the passion that they have as Christians. And the fascinating thing about this prayer is the guy that's leading the prayer, his father was in prison when we were there. And his father had been in prison numerous times in the course of his lifetime, but he was currently in prison when we got there. And his son, the guy that you're hearing pray, is now in charge of their church. And their church is spread out over 5 provinces in China. And I was shocked when I heard how big their church is and their network. Their church network, over 5 provinces in China, 5.5 million people. Now, this is a guy who would not let me carry my bag. And so this is them praying. Notice the passion of this pastor whose dad is in prison and the pastors and Christian workers that were there in that conference. I think sometimes we feel that Christianity is kind of a Western or American idea. Not. It's worldwide. In fact, Christianity has spread from America to especially Africa and Asia now are the biggest beds of Christianity, what we would call evangelical Christianity. It's no longer America. We've kind of gone dark, haven't we? We kind of created the mission movement, and now we need missionaries to come here because we're in the dark. But when you go to China, and right now, if you follow the news at all, you'll realize that they're really cracking down on Christianity in China. The underground church, there are 2 churches in China. One is the Three Self, which is the above-ground church, which is controlled by the government. But the underground church, that is the hidden church, is growing so fast, it's bubbling up through. There are so many people coming to Christ, and the government can't control it. And so they've begun to really crack down on the Chinese people in a horrific way, tearing down churches, tearing down their crosses, imprisoning pastors. You don't hear a lot about it on the news, but it's happening. And when you go, when you talk to these people, and they talk about, for example, that their father is in prison, I've been in prison. And when I was in Thailand and when I went to Laos, talking to the Laotian pastors, almost all of them had been arrested. That's just commonplace. They're just part of their life, and they expect it. Sometimes their whole entire village had been burned down. Their animals and livestock have been taken. And so here we sit in cushy chairs in a cushy church, and sometimes we forget about how much God has blessed us. Listen, if you're sitting here listening to me, you are a blessed person. God has allowed you to live in the most prosperous country, listen closely, that has ever been created, ever in the history of the world. No one has ever lived like you have lived. In fact, you won't believe this, but it's true. You live in the top 10% in the world. You say, but Jerry, I can hardly pay my bills. Listen, you live in the top 10% of the world. It's amazing, isn't it?
What did Dr. McDonald say? There are no poor people in America.
Yeah, what worldwide. And so we're very blessed. We have homes, we have heat, we have food. So God has really blessed us in a wonderful way. So pray for the people in China, as in Laos and Vietnam and Nepal, as we kind of walk down and discuss some of these things. The next place I went was Russia. This is an orphanage in Russia. This is a home that Outreach to Asia Nationals at that particular time had purchased. You see the parents over there. These are not all their kids. These are parents who have taken in these orphans. And while we were in Russia, we were in Vladivostok, and then we drove 10 hours in the boonies of Russia. And this was a church. Now, it looks like a big church, but if you look at in the middle of it, you see the guy there with the blue shirt with the white kind of... Now, if you notice, there's only two people in that pew. It's a very small pew. Probably could get three men in one pew. You could probably get two or three those churches right here on our platform. So it kind of gives you the impression that the pews are long, but they're not. Very small church. And Russia really is just not much gospel there. Very difficult in Russia. And the government also is starting to clamp down and has been now on Christianity, where, you know, for a while there, when the wall came down and things began to expand in that part of the world and Russia kind of broke apart, they allowed Christians in, but now that's closing again. And they're putting their foot down because what happens is when people find Christ, they become liberated. They give their allegiance to Christ more than the government. That creates a problem. And so they have to clamp down. That's why they clamp down in China and Vietnam and Laos, because the government controls things. They do not want Christianity because they don't want independent people. And so this is a church. You see to the right, you see me in the yellow shirt, and to the right, that's the translator. And then I had the wonderful opportunity to talk to this lady, this Russian lady. We had a great conversation through a translator, very elderly lady, probably gone and in heaven now as we speak. But these are just some things, some pictures that by you giving to mission, you're a part of. You're a part of. And then as we think about missions overseas, we also do missions here, Gary. And this is part of it here.
This is what we did yesterday morning. If you didn't have a chance to engage in it, we did meal packings for the folks of Haiti. We packed two pallets of meals. We worked with another organization. And
28,000 meals.
28,000 meals yesterday morning, and we had a great turnout. We did it in two shifts. We had over 100 people show up each shift. It was went real fast, real easy, but it was a great time of fellowship. And talking with Adam afterwards, it'll take 6 to 8 weeks for those meals to reach there. And so it takes that long. And so it was a great time and opportunity for people to serve the Lord and give back.
Here's just another picture of one of the groups that were there. We wanted them all there with their invert shirts on. As we think about missions, here's something that you can kind of put in your brain. We take the entire church. We have about 382 families that we have record of that give regularly to Crosspoint. So if you're here this morning and you just throw your money in the plate, it's not in an envelope, we have no idea you give, so you're not part of the 382. We don't know that. But if you fill out an envelope in front of you, or you're a member and you have tithing envelopes or giving envelopes, if you use those, then you're part of the 382 families that give regular Crosspoint. I have no idea who these people are. I don't want to know. I don't know how much people give. This could be a dollar a week for some people. For some people, it could be $200 a week. And only the business office would know that. So if you notice here, out of the 382 families that give regularly to Crosspoint, 205 give to missions. So if we look at that, it's about 53.66% of regular givers give to missions. So the question is what if the other 180 families started joining and maybe started a dollar a week or a dollar a month or 50 cents a month or whatever the case may be? Look how much more we could do for missions. Last year, our church pledged $165,000 for missions, and our giving starts November 1st through the last Sunday in October, and
we've met our goal.
We've met our goal. We're over our goal this year, which is absolutely awesome.
That's a real blessing and a testimony to the people.
It sure is. And then if you notice, we support about 46 missionaries, and the next week, we're going to ask everybody to fill out a faith promise card. We don't want your name on it. We just want you to check a box, and we'll collect those. And that's between you and the Lord. That's why we call it faith promise. It's your faith promise before the Lord. And you can become part of those 205. Hopefully, we'll have more families that will take part. And I would just ask you this. Can you do a dollar a month? Can you do 50 cents a month? Can you do a penny a week? Can you do anything? Because every single penny helps out for sure. Very, very important. Well, with that being said, the questions that I've asked you are there. And then one of our home missions that we've been involved in is the Mansion Church. And we've been for months now, waiting for the fire marshal's office in Augusta to give us a permit so that we can begin to finally, with the church that we own now downtown on Center Street, the old Bangle Floor Shop, to be able to go in there and redo it and get it up to snuff to be able to have church there. We need to do all the electrical work. We have to put an entire heating system. There's a lot of things that we have to do. We have families that have given us the money. Two families have given us about $100,000 to do it, but we've not been able to get in there because we can't get the proper permitting. We finally got it on Friday. Yeah. We finally got it. We're in. All right? So that is fantastic. So we finally have the permit to do the construction, and so we're very, very excited about that. But there's another mission that we want to close with this morning that's also local, and that's the godparent home. And we have a mother in the godparent home who about a year ago, her 12-year-old son died, and her 7-year-old son, Liam, has terminal brain cancer. And unless God does something supernatural, there's a good chance he's not going to make it. And they're both in the godparent home right now, and we've been able to provide a place for her to spend the last days and months with her son, where that probably would not have happened because she had nowhere to go. She was on the street. So we've been able to do that. You've been able to do that.
Amen.
That's what you do. And so I don't know if you caught the news recently, but little Liam is at the point where his goal is to be a police officer, which probably that's not going to happen. We don't know, but probably not. And the local sheriff, Troy Morton, brought a bunch of cops with him, a bunch of deputies, and they gave him a private escort to his final treatment at the cancer center here over in Brewer. And if you didn't see that on the news, we wanted you to see that because this also was a part of the ministry that we're involved in.
We met a 7-year-old Liam from Bangor. He has terminal cancer. He also has an outlook on things that's hard to match.
Brian Sullivan was there this morning as those whose lives he has touched gave him the ride of a lifetime.
He also goes by Liam.
Today is special about, that's my last treatment.
Liam has been in treatment for high-grade glioma for over a year now. He just is finishing chemo today. He understands what's going on. He knows his treatment. He knows the prognosis somewhat. He was only given a year. He wasn't supposed to make it till April. And here he is, and he's just going.
He's a happy kid. A happy kid with a dream.
Be a policeman when I grow up.
Liam's always wanted to be an officer.
He even has a favorite.
Officer Dan.
Dan Gastia from Bangor PD and Liam have struck up a friendship over the last year.
To see how strong he is as an individual is something I admire. He's faced a lot of adversity through this, and he's a strong individual.
On Thursday morning, Officer Dan and members of the Penobscot County Sheriff's Department gave Liam a ride to his appointment.
I'm going to be signing in the police call to cancer care.
Before they left, an exchange of gifts.
Oh, I got a present for you.
Pretty exciting when the young man gets to get in our vehicle and use the radio. And again, just he inspired us. And we thought we were here for him. And I think he's done so much for our community and for all of us. And it was just a blessing to be part of it.
Liam wants to be a police officer when he grows up. And for Liam, that's a dream that he won't be able to realize because of his illness. But we wanted him to have that moment today.
He's just amazing. He's my inspiration. He's a great kid.
Okay, is there anything else I should ask you that I didn't?
No.
Okay, good. Have fun. Sorry.
Brian Sullivan, WABI TV 5 News.
Now, our next service, Troy Morton, the sheriff, will be here, and he's going to give a short testimony. But obviously, we couldn't ask him to come to all three services. But I want you to know this is what missions is all about. Whether it's overseas with your pastor in a village in Laos, okay, or in the mountains of Nepal, or the jungles of Cambodia, or down at the godparent home, or down at the mansion church. That's what it's about. And so I'd like us to stand this morning to take a few minutes and just to spend in prayer as Jess plays for us. Just to ask God to bless all of the different ministries of our church and the outreaches that we have. And also to maybe pray about next week as we collect these cards. You know, one thing we don't do here, I think you know that, is we don't pressure people, we don't manipulate people. If you don't want to play a part, it's fine, there's no problem. But if God is speaking to your heart and you feel like you want to play a part and do something, then next week we want to give you the opportunity to do that. And so I'd just like to spend some time in prayer this morning. If you're here this morning and you're going through a difficult time and you'd say, boy, I could really use some special prayer, pencils right down front. He'd be happy to spend some time and pray with you. Maybe you want to come down this morning and just pray on your own. Maybe as you leave this morning, you'll write on the invert wall and say, hey, this is kind of what I plan on doing this year, to turn my world upside down with Jesus. Or maybe you're going to pray about maybe what you're going to do for missions next week. I don't know. We're all in a different place, aren't we? We just want you to do what God wants you to do. And if you do that, then God will be glorified. And so let's just bow our heads and close our eyes even now as Jess plays, and let's just spend some time in prayer. And then in a few minutes, Ryan's going to come and dismiss our service.